Welcome to another Go Ask Al episode of KubraCast. This is your host, Al's Electron, John Sachs. We answer questions starting with one about Stephen King, about the shift from AM to FM radio for rock and its effect on song length, and about the mystery of mastering songs, and about the funky faculty at Berkeley. As always, Nelly the Dog ends each segment with her own dogged thoughts. I got to think it would be fun playing in a band with Stephen King.
Well, not musically.
Not musically, but just being around him.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
He's a nice guy, yeah. I read that he struggled mightily to get his first book published. I mean, he just was starving, getting nowhere.
Well, everybody pretty much starts like that.
Yeah, yeah. Hard to imagine those days when he's so dominant. He still is dominant. He's been dominant for half a century, I guess. Now, here's a question about this shift from when rock and roll was on AM radio, and then it moved over to more sophisticated FM stations like WBCN here in Boston, and they started playing longer songs, and they would play a Dylan song, like a six-minute song. The question is, do you remember being affected by the shift from short AM songs to...
Well, it freed me to write longer songs.
Which you liked. You liked the freedom to...
I just liked freedom, period.
Mm.
Otherwise, everyone had to write 2-minute and 30-second songs.
Yeah.
Which was not pleasant.
I checked one time, and did you ever have to make up your mind by the Love and Spoonful was 90 seconds. It was a minute and a half.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredibly short.
Well, it wasn't noticeable.
Wasn't noticeable?
Yeah.
It was short.
Yeah.
I know.
So, there you go.
Well, they made their statement. They came in and they told the story that needed to be told, and they didn't need any more time.
Yeah, they made up their mind.
Right. By the way, the New York Times today has an article about a guy who is putting out 10 songs a day, every day, and putting them on Spotify. I haven't...
Putting them where?
On Spotify.
Oh.
I haven't checked to see the quality.
Well, that's the stupidest thing you could possibly do.
Well, I would think so. Spotify has a policy that if a song doesn't get 1,000 streams, they won't even pay the pittance that they pay anyway. So it seems like by putting out 10 songs every day...
I can't even think like that.
It's amazing, isn't it?
No. They're taking advantage of him, and he thinks he's taking advantage of them. And there you have it.
He's somehow making a living turning out in a ridiculous volume of songs.
How?
I don't know.
Yeah, well, then don't think that somehow he's making a living.
Well, the New York Times said he's making a living. But I'll tell you...
That doesn't mean it's true.
He wrote one of the 100,000 songs or so that he wrote was about poop. It's like when you have a little baby and all you're doing with poop. Another guy wrote one song, put it on Spotify, and has received $200,000 from his download fees because that song about baby poop is extremely popular.
Can we change the subject?
Sure.
And stop talking about shit?
Our regular guy, Joe, wants to know a little bit more about mastering a record. And did you master your own records? What is the deal, the mystique about mastering a record?
I just try and get the most out of the what's on the tape.
Okay.
So they use mostly EQ.
Yeah.
That's equalization for people who aren't in the business. And, or tone controls, and echo.
Mm-hmm. The mix is done. You only have 2 channels to work with, right?
Oh, if you're lucky.
Yeah, you feel, yeah, right.
And so they just use limiters and all these devices to make it sound as good as possible, unlike us.
Unlike this. Yeah, we don't worry too much about audio quality on on this podcast. Have you been sometimes amazed by hearing the music after it's been mastered, and then you hear it and say, wow?
No, because I'm there at the mastering.
Oh, you are there, really, yeah. Usually. Not true of the Dylan sessions, like you weren't there
for. I didn't produce them.
Right. They were mixed and mastered, and then, of course, you didn't. You probably, after the studio, like in Blonde on Blonde, you didn't hear shit until the record was produced, right?
I'm trying to remember. Probably.
When's the first time you heard Blonde on Blonde? Was it like on the radio, or did you get the CD?
I have no idea.
Yeah, okay.
There were no CDs.
Oh, right. That was, what am I thinking? This was 19...
That's what I keep asking myself. What are you thinking?
Right, well, I'm always amused that Blonde on Blonde was a four sides. It was two vinyl records, but when it came out on CD, it was just one CD. They didn't need two CDs to get
That's
it all
correct.
In there.
That's correct.
And in those days, there were four sides to Blonde on Blonde, and they all four sides had different personalities to them. One side of one was nothing but Sad-Eyed Lady of the Lowlands, which featured you playing the organ extremely prominently.
I didn't mix it.
Yeah, but still. Okay, so mastering. It's one of those little mysteries.
It's like the last thing before
yeah.
it gets to the listener.
Yeah.
So they do what they can.
Right. So Joe also wants to know how you started the Funky Faculty Band. Did people come and go, or was it pretty much the same dudes?
It was the same people.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a band I formed when I taught at Berkeley.
Yeah.
And so did they.
Yeah.
So it was very easy. I just picked the best guys.
Yeah.
And I had a band.
You just start by just jamming at Berkeley and see if it all worked? Or
yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. And then you started playing out.
Well, when people asked me to play out.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I wouldn't have, because I was teaching.
This has been Coopercast, another Go Ask Al episode brought to you by FM Radio. Give us your questions for Al at alcooper.com on the Coopercast page.